C1SP. Number 10B.
Whereas on the other side, we find that all that sort of mind which is not governed by God, but by beliefs, by tradition, by human beliefs, by personal sense, that that mind is not a real mind, and is really not entitled to the high naming of mind. And that therefore, that mind, which has not an immortal source, must be called mortal mind. And it must be called mortal mind. That's the analysis and the uncovering that goes on in this second part. Now, on the other side, just as we see in psychology and in psychosomatic medicine, we see that every mental attitude has a physical effect. We always have that law of cause and effect, which says that every mental state has its effect. And so, in uncovering this whole proposition of mortal life, we must see, we cannot deny that mortal mind and human belief have no effect on the body. But we see it day in and day out that they have an effect on the body. Just as the divine mind and the consciousness of the divine mind has an effect on life and health and happiness and everything. So, the mere fact that there is a law of cause and effect from the mental to the physical is not yet the proof that therefore spiritualism, which also believes in that, and Christian Science, which also testifies to that they are equal. See, we could say, well, both profess to the same, that mentality has a physical effect. So, both, therefore, Christian Science and Spiritualism are the same. No. See, because we go back and say, now, we know that this is so, but the big question is, which one of these law of cause and effect go on in the realm of reality? And which one goes on in the realm of human belief? That's the big question. The big question is not that we deny that spiritualistic beliefs can produce physical phenomena. That is not denied. On the contrary, Christian Science explains it, that it is so. And why it is so? We'll see that in the second subject. But it is so. The big question which we are concerned with is, but which of these two laws of cause and effect belong to the real and to reality, and which not? And there comes in again, you see, that great big overtone which goes through the whole chapter on spiritualism, of spirit, which now must uncover and decide on the reality of the mental. So we have here, as the big overtone of spirit, the question, what is real in the mental and what is unreal in the mental? And then, as an explanation, we find that which originates in the divine mentality, mind, that which originates in the divine mentality, that alone is true, truth. And so in the second part, we have always that combination of mind and truth. because it is answering and explaining that that which originates in a divine consciousness, in the divine mind, in our communion with the divine mind, that that is true, and therefore that that is a Savior, a Christ. We have here always the mind of Christ, the mind of truth. And on the other side, the proposition of spiritualism, which says also, we start with mind, with mortal thinking, with mind, small m. But what sort of mind? And we define it because that sort of mind with a small m is not taken from God, the divine mind, but is taken from spirits or from human beliefs or from human concepts, because it is not invested with the divine spirit. That mind produces also something, it produces also phenomena, but those phenomena are not true, are not real. They only seem to be real and true to the five physical senses, but the five physical senses, as we have seen yesterday, is always a liar. So, the phenomena of spiritualism, they are just as real and true to the physical senses as pain and sickness is true to the physical senses. Just as equally. But that does not prove anything. See, then she will show in the third part that that does not prove any reality, any mortality. That does not prove its divine origin. We only see and can get the proof of something by going back from the phenomena to its origin. To its origin. And by going back to its origin and analyzing from where does it originate? What is that origin? Is that origin God or is it something else? Something besides God? If we do that, then we uncover the truthfulness of the whole phenomena. Then we uncover if its origin is in God, we know it's true. If its origin is not in God, but in mortal thinking, in mortal concentration, in mysticism, in spirits, and so on, then it is not in God. And so, however wonderful these phenomena can be to mortal thought, they are always unreal. And they are never a savior. Spiritualism is never a savior. Spiritualism can fascinate people. Spiritualism can really fascinate people because of its phenomena. It's so-called wonderful and various and unusual and uncommon phenomena can fascinate people. Why not? Hypnotism does fascinate people, Eastern necromancy does fascinate people, all these things can fascinate people, and certainly medical science does fascinate people. But because of that it fascinates people, it is no proof of its divinity. The proof of divinity lies in its science, in its logic, in its inherent essence. Is it from the divine mind? If so, then it is a Christ, a Savior, then it's true. If it's not from the divine mind and its origin is outside the divine mind, then its phenomena, however wonderful, however extraordinary they may be, they are not true. They are not a Savior. And therefore spiritualism will not, in any form or shape, save a situation. Though Just as there are evil spirits, there are good spirits, and the good spirit can comfort somebody. Just as another mortal can comfort somebody. Just as the Pope can comfort somebody. Just as a medical man can comfort somebody. That the spirit, through spiritual communication, does comfort somebody is no proof that that spirit is God. There are good beliefs, just as there are evil beliefs, but there are always beliefs. And there are always beliefs on this plane of existence. Though they always will say we come from another world. But the belief is that here on this existence, on this world, we make that distinction of a world here and a world there. God never has made that. Reality has never made a distinction between a world here and a world there. In reality, there is only life, and that life is one life, not the one here and the hereafter. Not the life of the living and the life of the dead. It's only one life. It's always we in our own belief that build up such classifications, such distinctions, and then afterwards we enthrone them as something which has existed before mortal mind existed. And then afterwards we say they existed because God exists. That's the false conclusions. That's why here in this fourth chapter she lays so much stress on the term science and what science implies, on divine logic, divine law, and on the unscientific reasoning, on the assumptions, on hypotheses, and so on. Because she wants to show that all our thinking and reasoning, which is only to a very small extent conscious of its content. Whereas like an iceberg, nine-tenths of man's consciousness lies in the subconscious and is hidden to our consciousness, to our human consciousness. And therefore, the moment something rises up from that subconscious, we call it extraordinary, we call it something that comes from the divine, that comes from God, that comes from spirit, and yet it all lies within the subconscious of our plane of existence. So all we want to see perhaps today will always turn around this one and only point of mind and truth, which is the overtone of the second part, which will hammer in all sorts of ways through all the different subjects, will hammer in again and again and again to see that all the phenomena which we trace back to something mysterious and unusual and supernatural and I don't know what, are always phenomena which originate in a human belief, either in a voluntary human belief or mostly in an involuntary human belief, which originates always in a conscious human belief, but mostly in an unconscious human belief, which may originate always in an individual belief, but mostly in a world belief, in a cosmic belief, in a traditional belief, in the belief of race and of climate and I don't know what, of which we are not conscious. But to that whole gamut of mortal belief, there is one answer. And that is to throw away that whole thing, whatever it shows, no matter if it comes in the face of good or of evil, no matter if it comes in the face of the ordinary or of the extraordinary, that we put it away. Science says, don't look at beliefs, don't look at the testimony of the physical senses. Turn yourself to what? To that which is a principle. And start from a principle and deduce from a principle and stay with that principle, never leave that principle, and only stay within that what principle interprets about its own principle to its own principle as its own principle and never go away from that. Then we have reality. Then step by step, here a little, there a little, a people asks his God. Why should we ask the wizards, that peep and that matter? Why should we ask, why should a people ask their beliefs, their conscious and subconscious beliefs, their present beliefs and their age-old beliefs? Why should not the people seek unto their God? That's what she asks us here to do. So let's just take the first subject and see how in this first subject she begins to uncover that dual sense of mentality. She begins, I first epitomize this whole paragraph here. I think what she wants to show here is this, that spiritualism bases itself on human beliefs and hypotheses. That whereas Christian Science bases itself on the intelligence of the mind of Christ. I think that's the summary. What she wants to show here is, I think, this, that she wants to show us that spiritualism goes out from all what the human mortal mind knows, from all the beliefs of mortal mind, and that it bases on the testimony of this mortal mind belief, and goes out from that. And because it goes out from that, because it goes out from a mortal mind, it shows that the effect of it is always sickness. It's always destructive, not true, not health. Whereas if we go out, what she shows here, from the mind of Christ, from acknowledging the rights of intelligence, from going back to what mind says to a situation, that if we do that, that then that brings about health. See, she starts right in and says, you see what the spiritualistic belief is and how spiritualistic we are. She calls it the act of describing disease. Its symptoms, locality and fatality is not scientific, it's spiritualistic. See, how often are we spiritualists? And this talk about disease, and talk about its symptoms, and talk about its fatality, and about everything. That's not science. It's going out instead from the divine mind. It goes out from what the human mind beholds and knows, what the human mind knows about the situation. And so she says all that knowing and talking and influencing people by voicing false beliefs, we only make sickness greater and greater. We only produce sickness and augment. You say augment? Augment sickness. Whereas, on the other side, she says, Christian Science should not base itself on human beliefs and hypotheses, as spiritualism does, but should fall back on the principle of our intelligence, namely on mind. And so she gives in the next two paragraphs that I always forget the same word, gegenüberstellung, comparison, between the scientific practitioner like Jesus and on the other side the unscientific practitioner. See, like that the scientific practitioner like Jesus, that he worked on the one spirit, she says, on the one spirit, not with spirits, that he went said, I go to my father, my father works with me, and I work with him, you see, going back to the one cause that he never described, this is, but that he bade men to have the mind that was in the Christ. You see, it's not always the same tone that the scientific practitioner in dealing with any phenomena like sickness or disease, in dealing with a physical phenomena, he goes first back to its origin and says, what's the origin of it? And he goes back and says, well, what is the origin of everything? The origin of everything is mind, and I go back to mind, and I work with mind, and I never leave mind. Whereas the unscientific practitioners, he does not go to the origin, he looks at the effect. He is fascinated by the effect, just as spiritualists are always fascinated by the effect. And the unscientific practitioner looks at the effect instead of the cause. And then he tries to deal with the effect and tries to handle the effect. And so he says, well, you are ill, and makes it personal, you see. See, there is no spiritualism without personality. Spiritualism relies on material personality. So it makes everything personal. The moment we make something personal, we are spiritualists, because we testify that a person is the channel, the mediator of something higher, of God. You are ill. Your brain is overtaxed. You must rest. Your body is weak and it must be treated. You have nervous prostration and must be treated for it. You see, quite different. Jesus went to God, the unscientific practitioner goes to effect, to the person. So the quite opposite. The scientific practitioner goes to the one mind as the cause of everything and starts with cause. The unscientific practitioner always goes to the effect and tries to handle the effect. So science objects to all this, contending for the rights of intelligence and asserting that mind controls the body and the brain. So here we have that sense, you see, which shows that it is really going back to mind, and going back to mind, we always find health. That nothing then can interfere with that. That then spiritualism can be spiritualism as much as it wants to be, that it cannot affect the scientific practitioner, the scientific mental attitude, the mind of Christ. But at the moment we leave that true standpoint of the mind of Christ as the basis, and we accept the belief as real, that then we succumb to this belief, and so we get sick. This paragraph, really, I want to read this paragraph from the first edition, in which, because what she says here really actually happened when she was investigating spiritualism. You know, Mrs. Eddy wasn't closing her eyes on everything. She tried to investigate all these isms and so on. And so she writes from such a spiritualistic seance, she writes about this very same paragraph like this. She says, oh yes, here it is. At one time, a medium said to us, you are ill. The brain is overtaxed and you must have rest. To this we filed, can you say filed a vigorous objection or filed? Yes, that means bang, huh? To file or? No, we filed, it's challenging each other. Yes. We filed a vigorous objection, contending for the rights of intelligence, and that mind controlled body and brain. And the views she insisted on were the ones to be rid of in order to be well. Whereupon she stopped the conversation, exclaiming, Dr. Rusch is present, and says, you must use valganism, meaning undoubtedly galvanism, and rest or be sick. But even this oracular warning failed to convince us, and the consequence was we continued in a good state of health, having strong doubts that 50 years of post-mortem experience had so demoralized the orthography of that learned man or perpetuated his old beliefs material. You see, that's how she at that time gave the rendering of this thing. Showing there, you see, that she said, all right, a belief can be filed on me as much as it wants to be filed on me. That I'm getting sick, that I'm weary, that I'm overtaxed, that I must rest, or that I get weak and sick. He says, but as we take the opposite standpoint and assert the rights of intelligence and the rights that mind is controlling the body and not the belief is controlling the body, that in spite of mortal thinking that they were feeling better and stronger all the time. I think that's a very good illustration, because so often we hear that Christian Scientists are a little bit afraid of a mental surrounding and of mental malpractice and of mental influence from the outside, that they are really a bit afraid of what the Roman Catholics do and what the spiritualists do and what the other mental influence can do on them. Well, the moment we take take into our consciousness the possibility that mortal mind can have an evil effect on us, it will have an evil effect on us, but we don't need to take it in. We can go away, we can make up the decision not to be in the same boat, not to join hands with spiritualism and therefore with spiritualists, but to take the stand and the part of Christian Science and to assert the rights of intelligence, which says mind, the divine mind, is the only mind and therefore the only controlling mind and therefore the only power, and that's the only mind that controls body and brain. And then we will feel always better and better the more we are surrounded by evil attacks. That reminds me of another note from Mrs. Eddy, where she tried to experiment really on this question of has mortal thought might or not. She writes here from a textbook of Lydia Fitzpatrick, who was in the household of Mrs. Eddy, and from her notebook she writes about Mrs. Eddy. Oh,